Well, it really is good to be here. It really is. There's a lot of thoughts that run through one's mind, and one of the things that I was just impressed with anew, being back here this weekend, is how much a part of who I am I owe to this body of believers. And I understand that this body of believers is not static, continues to evolve, continues to grow, continues to change. In fact, there's some of you who are here, I'm not sure if you're visitors or not. And that's kind of a sobering thought, because this was home. Home has moved, but in many ways, home is still here. And so I just am particularly mindful of some of those positive vibes that I'm feeling here this morning. And we at Cornerstone in Labette County, Kansas, do experience indeed many of the blessings of a small congregation, and we rejoice in those. Believe as well that there are unique blessings and advantages to a larger body. And one of those that I was just reminded of again, it's kind of hard to miss that point, this morning was the singing. It was inspiring and encouraging to worship together with you in song. And part of the time I just sat there and listened, as far as that's concerned. It was a blessing. I felt led this morning to talk about something that is something that I would, I think, probably just as soon not talk about. But we are living in a time, in a describes it as a painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, joined with a desire to possess the same advantage. Okay? Do you hear that? Painful or resentful awareness of an advantage enjoyed by another, join with a desire to possess the same advantage. Envy is essentially directed at something that I wish I had, but I don't. Okay? Envy often sort of nurses this thought that somehow, and we probably wouldn't admit it in so many words, but nurses this thought that somehow God in all his sovereignty must have overlooked the fact that this, whatever it is essential to my well-being or happiness. That's envy. Now, jealousy, sometimes we use the word jealousy as well. Jealousy has, there's an element of jealousy that is very similar to envy. Webster again says jealousy is a jealous disposition, attitude, or feeling. But in addition to that, another usage of that word jealousy is simply zealous vigilance. Zealous vigilance. You know, God describes himself as being jealous. In Exodus 20, verse 5, he says, "Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them," talking about other gods, by the way, "nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. I am a jealous God, talking about zealous vigilance. And so not in every case is jealousy something with negative connotation. Jealousy can include the proper stewardship and care for what God has entrusted to us. So jealousy can be good and it can be otherwise. Envy is essentially focused on what we don't have, and jealousy is directed toward what we do have. And that jealousy can be expressed both appropriately, legitimately, and inappropriately. But what about covetousness? Coveting, another word that has a lot in common with this, but it's a little bit different. To wish for earnestly is Webster's definition there. To wish for earnestly. Now, there are things that we should covet. First Corinthians 12, I believe it's 31. But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet I show unto thee a more excellent way. And of course, there are things that we shouldn't covet. Exodus 20:17, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, nor shalt thou covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. So, as I looked at these things and their usages in the scripture, there are some ways in which jealousy can possibly be a good thing, and some ways in which covetous can. Maybe not predominantly those things, but there are the positive redeeming elements in those. But I couldn't find anything to commend about envy. I just couldn't find it. I don't see anywhere where envy is presented in a favorable light. So let's learn a little bit what we can in these minutes, what we can about envy. And I'm going to read two accounts in the Old Testament, two stories that I think illustrate what happens to those who give themselves over to envy. And by the way, I've entitled this message, Envy. And then it's a question, bane or blessing? Envy. Is it a bane or a blessing? And by bane, a source of harm or ruin. So is it good or bad? And I hope that will become evident as we go along. You might think you have the answer already, but we're not quite finished yet. I would invite your attention then to Genesis chapter 4, the first 8 verses, well-known passage, and there's many things we can learn from this. But I would like to look at this passage and the other one that I'll be reading shortly through and look at it from the perspective of what did envy do in this situation. And I would just like to say here at the beginning that envy is there are certain characteristics to envy to those who are exercising envy, to those who are operating under the influence of envy. And I would like for you to try to notice these characteristics as we go through these two readings. First of all, envy is often characterized by a fallen countenance, by an altered disposition, by a changed manner of relating to another person. The person who is feeling envious toward another, there's something changes. And oftentimes, both of those people sense what's going on. There's an altered disposition. Often, envy tends to bring distance between people who were close beforehand. Maybe not in every case, but oftentimes tends to separate people who were close beforehand, who were good friends. Envy is often directed towards people who make us, for one reason or another, feel guilty. Toward others who might make us feel guilty. Envy is often expressed as anger. Now that anger often comes under several different disguises. Maybe the anger operates under the guise of hurt feelings or concern or sadness. Pouting. That's often the way that anger shows itself in envy. And then when this is carried to its extreme, envy kills. Sometimes envy is, well, I don't think there's any of us here that have problems with envy who actually have killed physically someone else. But there are ways in which envy seeks to kill a person's reputation, his influence, his or her usefulness, etc. Let's read Genesis 4, the first 8 verses. And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. She again bare his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth? And why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against his brother and slew him. That's as far as we'll read this account. Did you notice? We don't read a lot about the relationship between Cain and Abel. But it's probably safe to assume that there was a time when they got along pretty well. We don't really know, but we know that when this story unfolded, there was a distance that worked its way into the relationship. Did you notice how Cain's countenance fell? And I'm not sure what all that meant, but something changed. It highlighted something that was different. It wasn't like it used to be. His countenance fell. See, Cain was feeling badly because Abel's sacrifice was accepted and his wasn't. And the Lord tried to reason with him. He said, well, you know that if you do well, you'll be accepted too. but he didn't listen to that, and there was anger. There looks like there was anger present, and he killed Abel. See, something about what happened that made Cain feel guilty. And there was more than one way he could have responded. But he chose the route of envy. And I think it would be good for us to not forget what the Lord told him that he could do to fix the problem. He said, if thou doest well, he asked it in a question actually, if thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? Instead of doing well, he took care of, tried to eliminate the what was making him feel guilty. Brought death. Let's look then at another story in 1 Kings 21. 1 Kings 21. We'll be reading a few more verses here. 1 Kings 21, the first 14 verses. And I'd like, again, as we go through this story, to have you notice the fallen countenance and these other ingredients as we go along here. 1 Kings 21. Well-known story of Ahab and Naboth. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth, the Jezreelite, had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the place of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house. And I will give it, and I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it. Or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. And Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. I'm just going to pause here. I don't think I ever read that verse without puzzling. And just, it just sounds like he was acting like a man that was, he was a man that was acting like a person who wasn't old enough to go to school yet. Went to bed and turned his face against the wall and wouldn't eat. That's what he did. Let's go on, verse 5. But Jezebel his wife came to him and said unto him, why is thy spirit so sad that thou eatest no bread? And he said unto her, because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite and said unto him, give me thy vineyard for money, or else if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. And Jezebel his wife said unto him, dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread, and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name, and sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in his city dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letters, saying, proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people, and set two men, sons of Belial, before him, to bear witness against him, saying, thou didst blaspheme God and the king, and then carry him out and stone him that he may die. And the men of his city, even the elders of the nobles who were the inhabitants of in his city, did as Jezebel had sent unto them. And as it was written in the letters which she had sent unto them, they proclaimed a fast and set Naboth on high among the people. And there came in two men, children of Belial, and sat before him. And the men of Belial witnessed against him, even against Naboth in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth did blaspheme God and the king. Then they carried him forth out of the city and stoned him with stones that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth is stoned and is dead. As far as we'll read. Notice the pattern. His countenance was sad. At least that's what his wife asked him. Why are you so sad? He was angry. His countenance had changed. I think in this case, envy was maybe a little different than in the case with Cain and Abel, in that here was Ahab feeling envious about something that someone else had. Whereas Cain maybe was feeling envious because someone made him feel guilty. Wanted something that someone else had. And when he realized that there was no legitimate way to get what he wanted, and resorted to other means that resulted in death. Now, how are we supposed to know? How are we supposed to figure out if envy is a problem here? And I'm going to let you define here, because that here might be in the congregation where you're a part of. It might mean in your family, or it might mean in your heart. How do we understand if it's a problem? Because it's a really sneaky thing. It's not real easy to identify. Maybe not as easy as in the case of Cain and Abel, and Ahab and Naboth, that envy is driving things here. Nevertheless, I think it's good that we ask ourselves, is that a problem here? Is that a problem here? How do we know? Well, one of the things that we've often heard said before, that where there's some sort of smoke, there's usually fire. Where there's smoke, there's often fire. When we lived just a quarter mile east of here, we had a fire in the hay shed. And for a day or two, we thought we detected a peculiar odor that we were somehow not quite able to identify. Not sure what it was, almost like tobacco. Maybe just a tinge of smoke, but not sure what it was or where it was coming from. I think it was a day or two, maybe even more. I don't remember the amount of time, but sometime we smelled something. And after a while, it became evident that there were hay bales burning. And so they had to be taken out, and it was a mess and whatever. But there was some smoke trying to give some evidence that there was fire going on. And for a long time, after those bales were taken out and put alone along the drive, kept on smoking. You couldn't see any fire. And going up to the bales, you really, it was often far enough inside, you couldn't receive much heat even. But there was smoke giving evidence that somewhere there was fire. So, I think one of the things that would be helpful for us to determine, if envy is here, is to try to notice the company that envy keeps. And I said where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And I've selected some verses in the New Testament that I would just like to read without necessarily citing the references or the context. But I would like for you to notice what in this, and this is not an exclusive list, or an all-inclusive list is what I meant to say, of the usages of the word envy in the New Testament. But I would like for you to notice particularly what envy is paired with. So listen, let us walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying. Some indeed preach Christ out of envy and strife, and some also of goodwill. He is proud, and this is, by the way, talking about a church leader who, well, it's 1 Timothy 6:4, if you want to read the context. This one was of particular interest to me. It says, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof come envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. And this verse yet, for where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. In each of these cases, the idea of envy and strife is paired. And that was part of the impetus for the question. How many of our relational challenges could be avoided or could be helpfully addressed if this idea of envy could be appropriately dealt with? What do we do? What should I do if I detect that I am being envied? You might ask that question. Proverb writer says in the 27th Proverb chapter 4, 27th chapter of Proverbs, verse 4, wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous. But who is able to stand before envy? Who is able to stand before envy? It's very difficult if I envy you for me to value and benefit from what you say. Did you know that? It's awfully difficult for me to hear you. Or because if I'm envying you, my attitude toward you is a very critical attitude. It's a very critical attitude. And so it's very difficult for you to say or do anything right. Who is able to stand before envy? You know, if we detect, and I think this, I would like to give this idea as this point as sort of a minor point, what we should do if we're the target of envy, because that's probably not our main concern. But let's remember what we're reminded of in Ephesians 6, where we were exhorted, or this is mentioned, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of the darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. So let's properly identify the enemy, and it's not our brother. And let's not forget that. Let's properly identify the enemy. Matthew and Mark both report in their Gospels that it was because of envy that Jesus was delivered up to die. And how did he respond? I appreciate his example. This is said about Jesus in 1 Peter 2:33, who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. Jesus, the Son of God, Jesus, God the Son, showed us by example that it is good when somebody envies us to commit that to him who judges righteously. And I appreciate that. Rest and resignation is, I think, an appropriate opposite of envy. What do I do? This is maybe the better question. What do I do if I detect that envy is here? And I said, how do we know if it's here? What do I do if it's here? Well, just going back to some of what I said earlier, some of these definitions. Envy, I believe, can sort of be boiled down to this. It's a result of a lack of trust in God's provision or his timing. A lack of trust in his provision or his timing, which is something that we really can't change. You know, it's something that we really don't have any control over. That was Ahab's situation. It's something he couldn't really change. There was a vineyard that wasn't legitimately his, and he wanted it, and there was no appropriate avenue for changing that, so he chose another avenue rather than an appropriate one. And, or it is something, a lack of trust in, envy is a lack of trust in God's provision or timing, or it is simply maybe about something that we can change. And that was the situation with Cain and Abel. See, he could have fixed that problem, but he didn't. He had a means of changing that situation, but he didn't. Now, if we choose, we can either choose to rest in his provision when we're confronted with the realization that we are nursing envy. We can rest in that provision, rest in his timing, and repent of our pride. If we don't choose that route, then human nature is to resort to plan B and to try to sort of put the other person down so that we don't look quite so bad. And that's what Cain tried to do. Eliminate the person who made him look bad. That's human nature. I believe that all of us, I was going to ask at the beginning actually, who of you know have experienced envy? And I'm not going to. I mean, you can ask yourself the question, okay? Who of you know what it's like to be envious? You know, I think we all have this, we all probably have had this temptation. We have noticed somebody that has something that somehow God in his sovereignty hasn't got around to deciding that I need. I think we've all noticed that at one time or another. But what do we do? What do we do at that point? And that's what I would like for us to understand the importance of responding appropriately when those kinds of thoughts come. Envy is one of the tools that the enemy uses to militate against God's people. So when I become aware of this thought, it's at that point, that's the crossroads for me. I can either go that way and take the route of envy, and we've noticed, I hope you noticed with me, the regression. The anger, the fallen countenance, the ending up with killing. Or we can say, you know, I think God is reminding me that I need to do, if there's something that I don't, that I wish that I would have that I don't have, we can maybe say, now I think maybe God is reminding me that he's really in charge. and that I can trust in his provision for me. Or if my envy is related to somebody by his example making me feel guilty or challenging me, you know, I can either, there's the crossroads. I can either say, try to figure out a way to put him in a, to alter his reputation so that mine doesn't look so bad. Or I can say, you know, the Lord in his goodness has allowed me to see this challenge and to learn by it. So when we get to those crossroads that I think we all come to, which fork are we going to take? Because if we take the high road, then that effort in planting the seed of envy can actually be a vehicle to take us God's way, to draw us closer to the Father. And you know, that is the beauty of serving a God that's perfect. Because all of these traps and all of these designs that the enemy throws our way don't have to turn out bad. They can actually take us closer to the Father if we respond appropriately. And so I ask the question in the title, Envy, Bane or Blessing? The choice is yours or the choice is mine. The choice is yours and the choice is mine. Will we take that opportunity to realize that God has a plan in this? And that he wants to draw me closer to him? Or will we take the other way? It's what we do at that crossroad that determines that. Let's kneel and pray. Our loving Father in heaven, thank you that you're a God that has provided for us abundantly, perfectly, and marvelously. We recognize that we live in a fallen world and that we struggle with imperfections. We struggle with things that aren't as they ought to be. But we recognize that you have provided for us the opportunity to use the situations that come our way as a means to draw us closer to you, the Father. And so we just want to take that opportunity, take those opportunities as they come, rather than taking the road that the enemy wants us to take. And so we just pray that you would help us to understand more of your will and your purpose in these things. We commit ourselves to you. In Jesus' name, amen.